Back in 1928, the magazine Sales and Marketing Management reported on a study among American businesses to determine how efficiently salespeople were using their time. The conclusion they came to, and it was a shocking conclusion at the time, was that the average salesperson was only working 20% of the time, 1.5 hours per day. Over the years, this discovery became the impetus for improved training, better time management skills, better supervision, and better control of the time usage of salespeople and a greater accountability of salespeople to the company for the way they were spending their time. In 1988, Sales and Marketing Management magazine reported on the results of the past 60 years of efforts to upgrade the time efficiency of salespeople. They reported that in 1988, the average salesperson in America was now working 20% of the time, 1.5 hours per day. Nothing had changed. A study at Columbia University concluded the same thing. The average first sales call was being made at approximately 11 a.m., and the average last sales call was being made at approximately 3:30 p.m. The rest of the time of the salespeople was spent warming up, shuffling papers, traveling, eating lunch, drinking coffee, and complaining about how tough business was. If you are a salesperson listening to this session, in the next few minutes you are going to learn how to double your time effectiveness and double your income. Many other salespeople have already used these ideas to double and triple and even quadruple their income in as little as 6 months. One gentleman tripled his sales in just 27 days as the direct result of applying some of these ideas. Let's begin with the job description of a salesperson. The job description of a salesperson is simply to sell. The measure of effectiveness of a salesperson is how much he or she has sold. Everything else that a salesperson does is secondary to selling. If the salesperson's job is selling, then the only time you are working as a salesperson is when you are face-to-face, head-to-head, knee-to-knee with a prospect or a customer. Salespeople are the only working people in America who wake up each morning unemployed, and they remain unemployed until they get in front of a person who is capable of making a buying decision. Here is a formula. Sales success is in direct proportion to your ability to initiate new contacts. Let me repeat. Sales success is in direct proportion to your ability to initiate new contacts. Because selling is a numbers game based on averages, the more new contacts you initiate, the more successful you are going to be, holding constant for all other factors. Here is my three-step method for outstanding sales performance. It is simply 1. Prospect. 2. Present. 3. Follow up. Prospect, present, and follow up. Successful salespeople are simply those who prospect, present, and follow up more often than unsuccessful salespeople. A person of average talents who prospects, presents, and follows up on a regular basis will run circles around a genius who does not. If a salesperson is not making the sales he or she would like to make or is not earning the income he or she would like to earn, it can always be traced back to a failure in either prospecting, presenting, or following up. The correct time usage in selling is 80-20. That means that you spend 80% of your time prospecting until you have so much business that you don't have time to prospect anymore. You spend the other 20% of your time on everything else, including planning, organizing, paperwork, studying your sales material, socializing, and anything else that is not prospecting. Prospecting is defined as taking specific actions to seek out and contact people who need, who can use, and who can afford to purchase your product or service. The only thing that you have to sell is your time, and your time is only worth something when you are face to face with someone who can buy. Peak performance and good time management in sales begins with setting clear income and sales goals for yourself. The very fact that you sit down and figure out on paper how much you want to earn and how you're going to go about earning it makes it far more likely that it will take place than if you didn't do it at all. The exercise that I am about to give you has doubled and tripled the incomes of many salespeople. It is powerful because it is simple and easy. In one of my recent sales seminars, a woman came up to me and told me what had happened to her in the 15 months since she went through my first seminar. She said that she was just starting in real estate when she came to my sales seminar. She had not sold her first house or taken her first listing. Nonetheless, she set a goal for herself of $50,000 income in her first year. At the time, she had no idea how few people selling residential real estate make $50,000 per year, but it worked. She passed the $50,000 mark in her 10th month of selling. She brought several of her friends from her company just to hear me explain the way to set sales and income goals that I'm about to give you. So start off by taking your very best year's income to date and grossing it up by 50%. In other words, if your very best year-to-date's income is $20,000, then set your income goal for the next 12 months at $30,000, or 50% more. If your very best year-to-date's income has been $40,000, then set your annual income goal at $60,000. For the sake of example, I will use $60,000 as an income goal. The next step is to determine exactly how much of your product or service you're going to have to sell in order to earn $60,000. For example, if you are getting a 6% commission on your sales, then you will have to sell $1 million worth of your product or service over the next 12 months in order to earn $60,000. That becomes your annual sales goal. Next, determine your monthly income goal. In our example, $60,000 divided by 12 months equals $5,000 per month. Then you determine your monthly sales goals. $1 million in sales divided by 12 months equals $83,333 per month as your monthly sales target. Now you determine your weekly income goal. Assuming that you will take 2 weeks off, divide the remaining number of weeks, 50, into your income goal for the year. 50 into 60,000 equals $1,250 per week in this example. In the same way, calculate the amount that you will have to sell each week by dividing your annual sales goals by 50. In this case, $1 million in sales divided by 50 weeks would mean that you would have to sell $20,000 of your product or service each week in order to earn $60,000 by the end of the 12-month period. Now divide the number of days per week that you work into your weekly income goal. If you work 5 days per week, then use that figure. In our example, $1,250 per week divided by 5 would be $250 per day. To get your daily sales goal, divide the amount that you intend to sell per week by the number of days you work. In this case, using $20,000 per week as the sales goal, divided by 5 would equal $4,000 worth of sales per day. Finally, divide your daily rate, in this case $250, by the number of hours you intend to work each day. For example, if you work 8 hours per day and you divide that into our example of $250, you would come up with an hourly rate of $31.25. From this moment, from the time you start work in the morning until the time you finish in the evening, refuse to do anything that does not pay you $31.25 per hour. And the only type of work that pays you $31.25 per hour is prospecting, presenting, and following up. This is a very important point that many salespeople don't seem to understand. You cannot drop off your laundry, pick up your groceries, get your car washed, or fool around in some other way during the workday and expect to earn $60,000 per year, because those activities do not pay $31.25 per hour. I can assure you of this, because of the law of sowing and reaping, that if you engage in $31.25 per hour activities 8 hours per day, 250 days per year, there is nothing that is going to stop you from earning $60,000 over the next 12 months. And if you engage in $60 per hour work, you are going to earn more than $120,000 over the next 12 months. Once you have your income and sales goals broken down into monthly, weekly, daily, and hourly amounts, then you define those goals in terms of the activities necessary to achieve them. You see, you cannot control your income or your sales on a day-to-day basis. They depend on too many other factors, but you can control your activities. So, based on your experience, how many appointments will you need each day in order to make how many presentations each day, in order to make how many sales each day, in order to earn how much money each day? Again, let me emphasize that success in sales is a numbers game. If you determine that you have to make 20 phone calls in order to make 5 appointments in order to get 1 sale, and you come in each morning and go to work on doing exactly that, you are going to be a success and nothing will get in your way. Here is an important point. You can dramatically increase the effectiveness of your time usage by increasing your sales skills. A key use of your time as a salesperson is to be continually upgrading your abilities in the critical areas that determine your success. For instance, if your success is determined by the number of appointments you get on the telephone, then decide right now to make yourself an expert at telephone prospecting. If your success is determined by how effectively you present your product, then make yourself an expert at presentations. If your success is determined by how well you handle objections or ask for the order, or cold call, then make yourself an expert in each of these areas. You may start out making one sale out of every 20 people you speak to. When you improve your sales skills, your ratio will go from 1 in 20 to 1 in 15 to 1 in 10 to 1 in 5 and eventually to as few as 1 in 3. Just think what a difference that would make in your income. There are some salespeople who have reached the point where they plan, prepare, and qualify so well that they do not even make presentations to people who have not already decided to buy. Once you have your sales, income, and activity goals clearly determined, plan your year, plan your month, and especially plan every week in advance. Plan your upcoming week on the weekend before. Most top salespeople take several hours on either Saturday or Sunday to plan their entire next week. Many of them plan an entire week on the previous Thursday and Friday. In fact, a simple test of how good a salesperson you are is how far in advance you have your appointments booked. A good salesperson can tell you where he or she will be and what he or she will be doing next week almost hour by hour. A poor salesperson doesn't have the slightest idea. Plan every day the day before, preferably at the end of the previous day. Sit down and write out a list and organize the list by time and priority before you turn out the lights for the day. Aim to structure your day with appointments every 30 to 60 minutes. There is a law of forced efficiency that says if you give yourself tight time constraints for each appointment, you will have a tendency to cover everything of importance and close the sale, if possible, in the time allocated. Be sure to group your calls in a geographic area in order to reduce travel time and to increase the number of calls you can make in a given time period. Remember, you have nothing to sell but your time. Don't make the mistake of making your first appointment in the north end of town and your second appointment in the south end of town and then spending half your day driving. Many low-performing salespeople do this, and they somehow convince themselves that they are working when they are traveling great distances between appointments. At the end of every sales interview, give the prospect an opportunity to buy. Ask for the order. Fully 50% of all sales calls end without the salesperson asking for the order once. Study and become proficient at using a variety of closing techniques. A closing technique can be defined as a way of getting the prospect to make some kind of a commitment or comment on your product. For example, a trial close like, "Does this make sense so far?" is a simple but powerful way to elicit a response and find out how well you're doing in the presentation. It has been estimated that you have to ask for the order in some way at least 5 times before the average prospect is ready to say yes. It is amazing how many prospects would say yes if you ask them just one more time. It is amazing how many sales are lost every single day because the salesperson does not ask for the order. Asking for the order in a polite, courteous, and carefully pre-planned way is a tremendous technique for improving the productivity of your time usage. Now let's talk about the 10 biggest time wasters in selling. Based on interviews with thousands of salespeople and sales managers, here are the major reasons why people fail to live up to their potential in selling. Number one, procrastination, the thief of time, accompanied by delaying tactics or finding all kinds of excuses for not getting out and getting going. Usually, procrastination is caused by a deep-down fear of rejection or fear of failure, what some people call call reluctance. This kind of fear leading to procrastination and delay can only be overcome by confronting it every day until it goes away. The most remarkable thing about your fears is that if you face them squarely, they diminish. But if you back away from them, they grow until they have the effect of paralyzing all productive action. The second time waster is incompletion of sales calls requiring callbacks. This usually occurs as a result of not having everything you need to make the sale. Sometimes salespeople do not have the proper price lists, the correct inventory figures, or the correct information to conclude the sale. Sometimes the salesperson lacks the ability to answer objections or to ask for the order. Making a sales call on a qualified prospect and then not being ready to conclude the sale is a tremendous waste of time. The third major time waster is poor preparation, which is usually demonstrated in inaccuracies and deficiencies in the presentation. There is nothing quite so insulting to a prospect as when a salesperson tries to sell him something without knowing anything about him. The fourth major time waster is ignorance, which is demonstrated by a lack of product knowledge. The salesperson has not taken the time to study the sales literature and thoroughly understand the product. When the customer asks questions about the product or service, the salesperson stumbles or bluffs or tries to wing it. This not only undermines the credibility of the salesperson and the company, but it shakes the confidence of the salesperson as well. When my wife and I were out looking for an expensive home in San Diego, we went out with several realtors to view homes for sale. As we would drive up to a house that was selling for several hundred thousands of dollars, I would ask a series of questions. I was always amazed to find that very few of the realtors had even taken the time to read the MLS sheets that gave the details on the house. Many of them had never been to the open houses on the homes they were showing for sale. They had not earned the right to offer the product for sale because they had not taken the time to fully understand the product in the first place. The fifth major time waster is unconfirmed appointments, where the salesperson arrives for an appointment that was made by phone and finds that the prospect is gone. The salesperson has wasted the time of preparation, the time of travel, and the prospecting time. Why does this happen? The main reason is because of the fear of rejection. The salesperson is reluctant to confirm the appointment for fear that the prospect will cancel it. Here is a simple method that has been very effective for me and many other salespeople. Call the office of the prospect before you leave. Ask the receptionist if the prospect is in. If the receptionist says yes, then simply say, "Please tell him or her that this is Brian Tracy and that I will be there for my appointment on schedule. Thank you very much." And hang up the phone. In this way, you remind the prospect that you are coming, and you put the prospect under obligation to see you when you arrive. You stop wasting your time by having unconfirmed appointments. The sixth major time waster, which we touched upon earlier, is poor planning of calls in a geographic area. It is spreading your calls all over town rather than concentrating them on a day-to-day basis in specific geographical areas. This causes an enormous amount of time wastage and is something you should resolve to avoid at all costs. The seventh major time waster is perfectionism, which is insisting that everything be perfectly in order before selling. It is another form of indecisiveness and call reluctance, or paralysis caused by fear of rejection and fear of failure. Whenever you find yourself insisting that everything be exactly right before you pick up the phone or before you make a call, have the honesty to realize that it is fear that you are dealing with. And if you confront the fear will go away. The only real antidote to fear and worry is purposeful action. If you get going and get busy, you will forget to be afraid. The eighth major time waster is distraction or mind wandering. This results in not paying attention in the sales presentation, not hearing the prospect, not reading between the lines and understanding what the prospect is really saying. Many salespeople are guilty of this. They simply do not pay attention because they are preoccupied with their own thoughts. Unfortunately, the prospect picks it up very quickly and loses all interest in doing business with you. The ninth major time waster is fatigue, sometimes caused by overwork. Sometimes it is simply not getting enough sleep the night before. My rule is this: if you are going to sell 5 days per week, then go to bed early 5 days per week. Selling is a very draining and demanding profession. It requires a tremendous amount of personal energy to be effective in sales. You cannot afford to stay up late at night watching television or socializing if you are going to be successful and effective the next day. The tenth major time waster is lack of ambition, lack of energy, lack of desire. These are often caused by having too few goals or having no goals at all. Sometimes they're caused by selling the wrong product or trying to sell something that you don't enjoy or believe in. Sometimes lack of ambition or lack of desire to succeed in sales is caused by not believing in your boss or not believing in the company or not liking or getting along well with your coworkers. Whatever the reason, if you are not really enthusiastic about your product or service and the people you are selling to, it could be an indication that you should be doing something else. You cannot for very long force yourself to sell something that is wrong for you. It will simply make you tired and depressed, and you will never be successful at it. And finally, here are seven valuable ideas to help increase your sales effectiveness by using your time to its best advantage. Number one, as I mentioned before, early to bed and early to rise. Get up and get going early. Get lots of sleep. Sometimes the very best use of your time is to come home from work early and go to bed early and get a solid 9 or 10 or even 12 hours of sleep so that you can be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed the next morning. It is very hard to be full of energy, excitement, and enthusiasm about your product or service when you are tired from not getting enough sleep. Number two, read 30 to 60 minutes in sales or motivation or inspiration to start your day. This is one of the most important things you will ever do. Many salespeople have told me that this technique of getting up each morning and reading 30 to 60 minutes has changed the whole direction of their careers. If you spend 30 to 60 minutes reading a book on sales each morning over the course of a week, you will probably read one whole book. If you read one book per week for the next year and don't even read on your holidays, you will read 50 books on sales over the next 12 months. If you keep that up for the next 10 years, that's 500 books. Now, in a world where the average salesperson never reads a book on sales in his or her life, do you think that if you read 500 books over the next 10 years, that it would affect your income? The fact is that you would probably be one of the most successful and highest paid salespeople in America if you were to read 30 to 60 minutes on sales each day and then go out and apply something that you had learned. Number 3, schedule your first appointment early. Get up, get out, and get going. Try to set your first appointment for 8 a.m. or even 7:30. Many prospects who do not have time to see you in the daytime can meet with you at odd hours. Sometimes they work early or work late or both. If you offer to meet with them for breakfast or meet them at their offices at 7:30, they can often fit you in. Number 4, as I said before, a tremendous way to increase your time effectiveness is to spend 80% of your time prospecting until you become too busy closing sales and servicing customers to prospect quite as much. Remember, sales success is in direct proportion to your ability to initiate new sales contacts. Heinz Goldman, the master sales trainer, says that sales success comes from being eager to call on customers. When I was a sales representative leasing new office space, I would go to the top floor of an office building by elevator and then call on every office in the building as I worked my way down. Over the course of 1 month, I made over 600 calls. If you find yourself with time on your hands, just go out and make 20 or 30 cold calls and you will be amazed at the results you get and how good you feel because of it. Number 5, and this is so important, spend your entire day working. Make every minute count. Work all the time you work. The average salesperson is functioning at 20% efficiency. If you just resolve to work all day long, that alone can catapult you into the upper ranks of sales success. Don't waste time. Don't sit around taking coffee breaks. If you must take coffee breaks, do it with prospects or do it on the move. The average salesperson who takes 2 20-minute coffee breaks per day spends 40 minutes per day unproductively. 40 minutes per day times 5 days per week is 200 minutes per week. 200 minutes times 50 weeks per year is 10,000 minutes, or the equivalent of 166 hours of productive time that the average person spends sitting, drinking coffee, and reading the newspaper. 166 hours is 4 40-hour weeks, or the equivalent of 1 month's income. If you want to give yourself a raise, the fastest way to do it is to work during your coffee breaks. Don't waste lunchtime either. Use your lunchtime to prepare for your afternoon appointments or to exercise so that you're full of energy. If you use your lunchtime wisely and you take 1 hour per day for lunch, that works out to 250 hours per year. 250 hours per year is more than 6 40-hour weeks, or more than 1 1/2 months of additional income. Just using your coffee breaks and lunch breaks for productive activities will give you a 20% increase in pay almost immediately. Number 6, listen to educational audio cassettes like this in your car. Turn all driving time into learning time. Turn your car into a university on wheels. From the time you get into the car until the time you get out of it, your audio cassette player should be working. The average salesperson spends between 500 and 1,000 hours per year behind the wheel of a car. If you use that time to educate yourself, you can become one of the most knowledgeable salespeople in America just listening to audio cassettes. Number 7, use a time planner of some kind and write down every appointment and note. Let your time planner be the control center for your sales activities. Use it as a tickler file to remind you when to get back to your prospects. Get a time planner of some kind that enables you to store contacts, that gives you a month at a glance and a year at a glance, and enables you to run your sales business from one place. Once you have a time planner, use it religiously. Write down everything. Plan every single thing in advance. Keep accurate notes of every telephone conversation and presentation. Start and end every day by reviewing the information you've stored in your time planner. In a way, your time planner becomes your mobile office, and the power is always on the side of the person who has the best notes. In conclusion, remember that as a salesperson, all you have to sell is your time, and the only time you are working is when you are with a prospect. Learn and practice these time management techniques over and over again until they become second nature. Good time management skills are the perfect vehicle to get you from where you are to where you want to be. They, more than anything else, will assure your success in sales. To be truly successful, you need to develop a philosophy of time management, a worldview that recognizes time as the one invaluable, indispensable, irreplaceable ingredient for a successful, happy life. How do you develop a philosophy of time management? Well, first of all, you take the long view. Look as far into the future as you can. All really successful people are those who have long time horizons. Sociologist Dr. Edward Banfield of Harvard University wrote a book some years ago called The Unheavenly City. In it, he reports on his years of research seeking the reasons for upward social and economic mobility in our society. He was looking for the predictors of higher social class. He wanted to know what factors could be accurate indicators for increasing wealth from one generation to another. He studied things like education, intelligence, family background, race, occupation, and other personality factors. He found that none of these were accurate predictors. There were people who ranked high in one or more of these, yet were still economic failures. Many of them had downward social mobility. They were earning less than their parents. Dr. Banfield finally concluded that there was only one factor that could accurately predict whether or not you were going to move upward and onward financially. He called it time perspective. He defined time perspective as the period of time that you take into consideration when making your day-to-day decisions and planning your life. He found that successful people were those who had a long time perspective. That is, they planned in terms of 5, 10, and even 20 years ahead. They looked at everything they did in terms of how it would affect them in the distant future, as well as the immediate present. For example, it is traditional amongst the British upper classes to immediately register their children at birth at Oxford or Cambridge or one of the esteemed public schools of England, even though the children will not be attending there for 18 to 20 years. This attitude of taking the long view also seems to characterize men and women who achieve greatly in the course of their lifetimes. What Dr. Banfield and other researchers found was that as you go down the social and economic ladder, the time perspective at each income level shortens. When you get to the very bottom of the social pyramid, to the hopeless alcoholic or drug addict, you find a time perspective of one shot or one drink, sometimes only a few minutes. The average working person has a time perspective of about 2 pay periods. As you go up the economic ladder, the time perspective lengthens until you reach the most respected people in society, like the family doctor. Why is it that we have so much respect for the family doctor? Is it because we recognize that he or she has spent 8 or 10 or even 12 years of study, internship, residency, and practice to reach the point where he or she can make a good living? The average doctor in America earns $132,000 per year, but the average doctor has spent almost 12 years of hard work and sacrifice preparing himself or herself to earn that kind of money. That is what is called long time perspective. The penniless immigrants who arrive in America with no money and no language skills and who go to work doing menial jobs but save their money so that their children can have a chance at the American dream have real class. They have long time perspective. In a way, they have more admirable characters than people who have had all the benefits of American education but who spend every single penny with little thought for the future. You begin to move yourself into a higher social class the day you begin to take the long view in your own life. The man or woman who conscientiously saves 10% of his or her income and puts it away toward financial independence is a person who is virtually assuring a higher quality of life for himself or herself and their children. So ask yourself, what time period do you take into consideration when setting goals and making important decisions? How far into the future do you look when you make decisions on how to allocate your time and your resources? Many years ago, I worked for an extremely wealthy man who started with nothing and built a $500 million fortune in real estate. He taught me to always think of owning a piece of property for 20 years when I was considering buying it. He said that if you think of owning the property for 20 years, you will be much more alert to the strengths and weaknesses of the investment. He said that the long view sharpens the short view, and it was one of the most valuable pieces of advice I ever received. It is like climbing a mountain and every so often looking up at the summit, your goal, and then adjusting your path so that every step is going in that direction. One way of determining your priorities in the short term is to analyze the future impact of present decisions. Something that is important is something that has a potential long-term impact on some part of your life. Something that is unimportant is something that has no potential long-term impact. For example, reading a book or listening to a tape or taking a course that teaches you something valuable or which gives you an additional skill that you can use for the rest of your life is an activity with a high potential future impact on your career. Watching television or reading the sports page or taking a coffee break, on the other hand, no matter how well you do it, will have no possible impact on your life. You see examples of this confusion over time perspective all around you. On the same street, living in two houses of similar value are two different families. Each family earns approximately the same amount of money, but one family has a 20-year time perspective, and the other family has little or no time perspective at all. Over the course of the years, the family with long time perspective will carefully save and invest and accumulate an estate that will enable them to retire in comfort. The other family, earning the same amount of money, maybe even doing the same kind of work, but with no time perspective, will end their working days with little or no money put aside. If you were told today that unless you did something very specific, you were going to be penniless when you reach retirement age, how would that affect your thinking? What would you do differently with that possibility hanging over your head? Well, the truth is, unless you do something, that is very likely the way you will end up. To practice thinking with long time perspective not only requires character, but it develops character in the person who does it. Character is always the result of practicing self-discipline and developing the habit of taking the long view in decisions concerning health, wealth, relationships, and reputation. Character comes from thinking always of living with each of your decisions for the next 20 years. Economists and sociologists generally agree that the primary reason for economic failure and underachievement is the inability to delay gratification. It is the tendency to spend everything you make and more besides with little thought for the future. It is a lack of time perspective with regard to money. So decide today to plan and act for the long term. Practice short-term pain for long-term gain. Be willing to pay the price of success in terms of hard work, sacrifice, and delayed gratification. Remember, saving and investing 10% of your income from the age of 21 to the age of 65 will make you a millionaire over the course of your working lifetime. More than that, the quality of character that you will develop as a result of the self-discipline you impose on yourself in becoming financially independent will make you a truly exceptional human being. The next part of a philosophy of time management is to take the short view. Treat your time like your life. Measure out your time in minutes rather than in hours or days. In a recent article in Fortune magazine, several of the most successful and highly paid executives in America were interviewed and studied with regard to how they used their time. It was found that every one of them treated their time as a scarce resource, as an indispensable ingredient of achievement, and that they allocated it accordingly. They were very jealous of their time. They did not spend it or give it away or use it thoughtlessly. They planned out their days and hours in terms of minutes. In fact, we have found that the smaller the unit of time you think in when planning your day, the more successful you are likely to be. Unsuccessful people think in terms of days or mornings and afternoons. Successful people think in terms of 10-minute blocks like lawyers or accountants. Since time is your scarcest resource, whenever you can, buy time. Trade money for time. Hire people to do things so that you can have more time for yourself, your family, your work. If you aspire to earn $25 per hour or $50,000 per year, then hire people to do the things that pay less than $25 per hour. If you can hire someone for $5 or $6 or $7 an hour to mow your lawn or clean your house or wash your car and so on, pay the money willingly to free up your time for higher value activities. Keep track of how efficiently you use your time. Remember that most people are not even aware of the amount of time they are wasting hour by hour. A good exercise is to get a wristwatch with an alarm that sounds every 15 minutes. Each time the alarm sounds, stop and observe yourself and look at what you're doing. If possible, keep a time log and make a note of what you're doing each time the alarm rings. Ask yourself, is what I'm doing right now a good use of my time? Someone once said that all of life is the study of attention. The more attention you pay to the way you are using your time, the more efficient and productive you are likely to be. In taking the short view, ask yourself, how much of my life am I willing to donate to someone or something else? Remember, your time is equal to your hourly rate, at the very least. If your hourly rate is $25 and someone wants an hour of your time, that person is in effect asking you for $25. If someone asks you to give your time to a particular cause or activity, you have to ask yourself, how important is that cause or activity to you? And how much of your time or your money are you willing to donate to it? If a person or activity is not important enough for you to open your wallet and peel off $20 bills and give them away, then discipline yourself not to do it. This brings us to one of life's biggest time wasters, working at the wrong job. One study concluded that 80% of people working today would rather be doing something else. Studs Terkel, in his book Working, said that 84% of working people do not feel fully challenged by their current jobs. Getting into or staying at a job for which you are not ideally suited is one of the greatest wastes of time and life that you can possibly engage in. So let me ask, do you love what you're doing? Do you love what you're doing enough to want to be the best at it? Do you care about your job to want to do it for the next 20 years? Is your job challenging and fulfilling? Can you hardly wait to get to work on Monday morning? And do you hate to leave on Friday evening? These are important questions. All successful people can answer yes to these questions. Unsuccessful people invariably answer no. Here is a test question that we use in our seminars. If you won $1 million in the lottery tomorrow, would you continue to work at your present job? If your job is right for you and you won $1 million in the lottery, you would probably want to continue doing your job only in a different capacity or place. If it is the wrong job for you, winning $1 million, which means having the time and money to have a choice, would probably cause you to immediately think of doing something else. Max Gunther, in his marvelous little book, The Zurich Axioms, explains his rules for succeeding in investments or in speculation. He says that the primary reason why most people fail in investing, especially in the stock market, is because of their inability to cut their losses. Primarily because of their egos, they cannot bring themselves to admit that they have made a mistake and that they have invested their money in the wrong stock. Instead, they defend and try to explain away the fact that they are losing. By the same token, one of the biggest of all time wasters in life and work is the unwillingness to admit that you have made a mistake, that you have made a poor choice, and that if you had to do it over again, you would do it very differently. This unwillingness to admit error keeps people locked into unhappy and unsatisfying situations year after year. To put this into perspective, ask yourself how long you intend to live. Most people have never decided upon exactly how long they intend to live, but let us say, for example, that you plan to live to the age of 80. Let us say that today your age is 35. That means that you have 45 years left to go. So your big question is not how long you have invested in your current situation, but how much longer you have to go. Someone once said that we should all be concerned about the future because that is where we will spend the rest of our lives. Because of the dynamic nature of the job market, the average person in America will have 10 major full-time jobs and as many as 4 different careers over the course of his or her working lifetime. Many people are going back to universities in their 40s and 50s and getting professional degrees and practicing medicine or architecture or engineering for another 20 years before retiring. So look at your current job and ask yourself if this is what you would like to do for the rest of your life. If it is not, then sit down and decide what it is you would like to do and what you will have to do to get into that position. Working in the wrong job is a way of wasting your life. Working in the right job is one of the very best ways of living a long life of happiness and fulfillment. What applies to your work also applies to your relationships. Another of the great time wasters in life is staying in the wrong relationship, one that no longer makes you happy. In our seminars, I ask people, what is the purpose of a relationship? After they've given me a variety of answers, I tell them what I believe to be the correct one. The purpose of entering into a relationship is to be happier inside the relationship than you were outside the relationship. Since every human act is aimed at increasing our level of happiness, the choice of a relationship is one of the most important that we make. However, if you find that you are unhappier inside the relationship than you would be outside the relationship, then you owe it to yourself to seriously consider making some changes. Your overarching goal in life, your main organizing principle, should be to become everything you are capable of becoming and to fulfill your full potential as a human being. Anything in life that stands between you and your happiness and fulfillment is wrong for you. Being willing to admit that you have made a mistake in a relationship is one of the greatest time savers and life enhancers that a person can engage in. The simplest technique is to use what we call zero-based thinking. Zero-based thinking means that you put every previous decision you have ever made on trial for its life on a regular basis. You ask yourself, if I had not made this decision, knowing what I now know, would I make it today? If the answer is no, then your next question is, how fast can I get out of this situation, or how fast can I change it? There's a beautiful line from the play Cyrano de Bergerac by Edmond Rostand, where Cyrano explains his personal philosophy of individualism. He says, "I choose the line of least resistance in this, that I choose to please at least myself in all things." Another way of putting it is to just say no if a demand on your time is not moving you towards something that is important to you. Be selfish with your time. It is your life. And remember, this life is not a rehearsal for something else. The fear of criticism and the disapproval of others often causes us to do things that we don't believe in or care about. The key is not to worry about what people think of you. The fact is that they very seldom do. If you say no to requests for your time that are not consistent with your own goals and personal aspirations, people will express some disappointment, and then they will go on and ask someone else. The next principle in developing a philosophy of time management is to treat time like money. As we have said before, allocate your time at your hourly rate. Use this as a measuring tool in everything you do. Concentrate your efforts on high-value tasks, jobs that can pay you what you want to earn. If you want to earn $25 per hour, continually ask yourself, is what I'm doing right now the sort of work that pays $25 per hour or more? If it is not, discipline yourself to stop doing it and turn your attention to something else. Invest in self-improvement, in personal and professional development to increase the value of your contribution. Dedicate yourself to lifelong learning. Remember, the development of expertise and skill through hard work and study can do more to multiply your value and your earnings than almost anything else. Personal and professional development is a tremendously high-value use of your time. The future impact of self-study can be immeasurable. In order to discipline yourself, resolve to set a positive example of personal efficiency for your staff, your children, your co-workers, and your boss. See yourself as a role model. Imagine others are looking up to you as a model for time management. Imagine that you are setting the standards for personal efficiency and effectiveness in your organization. Many successful men and women practice behaving as though they are being carefully observed by others. This causes a person to be far more disciplined in their behavior than if they thought no one was watching. Another major use of time management skills is to keep your life in balance. Use your increased efficiency and productivity in order to get more time to spend with the people that you care about. Remember, the major source of life's real joys are happy interactions with other people. The whole purpose of time management is to allow you to get more pleasure out of life. Keep your life in balance by asking yourself on a regular basis, how would I spend my time if I had only 6 months to live? Once you've answered that question, then ask yourself, how would I spend my time if I had only 6 weeks to live? Then 6 days to live? Then 6 hours to live? And finally, what would you do? Who would you speak to? What would you try to get accomplished if you found out that you had only 60 minutes left to live? Reflecting on these questions helps us to develop perspective and to see what is really important to us on a day-to-day basis. Use time management to keep your life in balance by spending time on physical fitness, on exercise, on walking and swimming, racquetball or tennis or golf, running or climbing. You need to exercise vigorously at least 3 times per week to maintain high levels of physical fitness and to perform at your best. If ever you feel you are too busy to exercise, then you know for sure that your life is out of balance. During the working day, take frequent breaks to stretch, to go for a walk, to change your space. Going for a walk during the day will do more to make you alert and productive in the afternoon than almost any other activity. Eat lightly, especially at lunchtime, to keep your mind clear and sharp for the rest of the day. In Benjamin Franklin's autobiography, he explains how he developed the habit of eating lightly at lunchtime while his companions were gorging. He explains that for the rest of the day he was sharp and alert while they were slow and drowsy. He attributes the habit of eating lightly to being instrumental in his success as a young man. By watching your diet, your hours of work will be far more productive. Remember, it's not the time you put in, but the results that you get out that counts. Make good time management a part of your whole life. Teach your children good work habits by helping them with their homework and insisting that it be done promptly. John Molloy, in his book, How to Run the Competition into the Ground, reports the results of a study on highly productive young people. When they traced the young people's work habits back to their homes, they found an important factor. They found that in the homes that produced high performers, the parents were very adamant about the importance of doing good homework. Moreover, they found that in the homes where children were highly productive, the family dinner table was the place where the homework was completed. After dinner, and before the television was turned on, the children got out their homework and did it in the presence of the parents. The parents helped them whenever necessary. In the homes that produced young adults who were unproductive, the parents either did not personally get involved in the homework, or they sent the children to their bedrooms to do the homework alone. Anyone with children can see why this would not lead to productive work habits. To keep your life in balance, remember that relaxing is often a valuable use of time. Sometimes the most important thing you can do is nothing. You need to take time off from work and pressure to just sit and relax and smell the roses along the way. Go for a walk with your spouse or your friends. I have found that it's essential that you take at least one full day off per week from any kind of mental effort. You will find that you are far more productive on the other 6 days if you completely relax and let go on the seventh. Take time to sit back, to think, to reflect, and to readjust your goals and priorities so that your daily life is consistent with your deepest convictions. Be sure that your goals and activities are congruent with your values. Take time to think through what is important to you and to make sure that the outer aspects of your life are consistent and harmonious with the inner aspects. Finally, remember that time management is life management. Self-control, self-mastery, self-management, a discipline and a habit that can be learned. Time management must be practiced every day, all the days of your life. It is the one habit, the one skill that is essential to a satisfying, fulfilling, high-performance life. Thank you for listening to this program. I hope it's been a help to you. Please take some time to think of how you can apply these ideas now, today. Then go back and listen again as often as necessary until these principles become as much a part of you as breathing in and breathing out. Good luck.